Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I am a rather tired fellow, I must admit. But I'm tickled pink to be back in the broadcast chair in time for More and Monday on the Horn, because that's what it is today. It's the 16th day of March, 2015, a little bit more than a minute past 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. So that would make it about a minute past 3. In the Pacific Daylight Time Zone, or whatever time it happens to be, whenever time you happen to be listening to the program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, like I said, it's More and Monday on the Horn. And wow, Jug of Punch is in the chat room too. Because see, it was really cool. We had our People's Foot Rally today down in Charleston, West Virginia. It was, of course, streamed live on the Horn. Chug a Punch must have just absolutely buried his foot in the floorboard getting home, because see, that was, we had another one of those cool moments when I got to meet another member of the Horn Family Commune congregation, who with Chug a Punch and Mo, and that was a delightful opportunity. They came all the way from Northeast Ohio down to Charleston to bear witness to our demand that the issuance of mountaintop removal permits cease, as perpetrated by the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting. Protection. Right. Yeah. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn. I appreciate knowing that because, well, like I've said before, we don't have any. We don't have an actual air monitor here because the delay would be intolerable. That's one of the curses of the interweb tubes. Let's see. So, yeah, it's More and Monday. Good evening to the chat room. We've got a nice little crowd beginning. Good evening, Labor Man. Good evening, Sentient Steve. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Jeremy. And good evening to News Ninja Carol Baker. Also, good evening to Man Cave. Sparky is apparently in his second incarnation this evening. Now, the same gentle reminder applies as applies every evening. We try to raise $150 every evening to help keep the bills paid and keep everything rolling and the packets passing and the streams streaming here. And tonight is no different, so if you would like to help out, it would be much appreciated if you would toddle on over to the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com and kick in some or all or whatever you feel like you can best do to help us keep this all afloat. And, of course, the U.S. Postal Service method works well, too, as Boss Man Wayne informed me. He didn't even have to wear his spider-proof gloves the other day, and he was met by actual mail and not echoes, which was really quite exciting. And that mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the gentle reminder that checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should instead be made payable to The Horn, because Boss Man Wayne wrangles all that, and I don't see him. So that makes it easier for him to deal with. So hopefully we will meet that fundraising goal this evening, and every evening this week, and through the end of March, et cetera, et cetera. I got to tell you, we had a lovely day for the People's Foot Rally, and as soon as I finish getting the Rolls-Royce crossover vehicle, it's a cushy ride. unloaded, I'll get the audio file out of the, and that's F-I-L-E, not P-H-I-L-E, I'll get the audio file out of the laptop and put it up for Ben to put on the server so that it can be had at whiterosesociety.org. Had a lot of good speakers. I emceed the thing, such as it was, and I also provided the streaming services and public address and all that. It was a very busy day. It was a very busy day that started about 5 o'clock this morning, and, well, I spent most of yesterday testing the rig. Every time the rig goes out, you have to test it. You can't make any assumptions. So it's been a tiresome couple of days, but learned a lot, and learned a lot for purposes of going out and working in the wider world. I found out, for instance, that I had enough bandwidth to stream not only audio, but video there in the parking lot of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting. I mean, pollution, protection. It's just so hard to remember that they actually are charged with protecting anything when it's the last thing in the world they do. Yeah. So we had a good rally. We had a good crowd. Somewhere in excess of about 150 people showed up. Heard from a lot of folks. My good friend Alan Johnson from Christians for the Mountain spoke, as did Maria Gano. We heard from Stanley Sturgill, a UA coal miner from Kentucky. It was very good all the way around. And a lot of people of goodwill showing up to hopefully demand something approaching justice for the sick and the poisoned of Appalachia. So that leads us to here. We tore down. I tore everything down with a little help from my friend Junior Walk and loaded it back into the Rolls-Royce SUV crossover vehicle. You know, we park it in a little shed right next to the Gulfstream 5 here at the Horn Mansion. Yeah. Did I mention it's a cushy ride? Because it is. I haven't gotten it unloaded yet. It was just a little bit worn out by the time I pulled into the driveway a couple of hours ago. That'll be what happens after. That'll be what happens after the program. Marty, I'm not sure what Jug was driving. Was Jug a Punch driving a black Trans Am? News Ninja Carol Baker informing us, 82 degrees in Hooterville this evening, a record day. Usually 40 to 45 degrees on St. Paddy's and St. Paddy's Eve there in the general, in the greater Hooterville metroplex. Same here. We got well up into the 70s, and we could not have asked for a better day. Sunny blue skies, light wind blowing, all you needed. Well, it's like one of my favorite scenes from that lovely movie, the Sandra Bullock vehicle, Miss Congeniality, where one of the pageant contestants is asked for her idea of a perfect date. And she said, you know, sometime in late April, early May, it's not too hot, all you need is a light jacket. Yeah, that's the kind of day it was here. All you need is a light jacket, right. Let's see, thank you for your continuing good wishes for Ferg. He is working on his recovery and working on feeling better. And I will... at some point, he'll wander back here and talk a little bit when he feels, you know, when he feels like doing it. But thank you for the kind wishes, one and all, because they continue to roll in. Thank you very much. Now, it is, oh yes, just because I'm blathering on about what I did with this morning and what I did with yesterday does not mean that there's not a lot more actually happening. Because, well, the Moran Monday comes after the weekend because the Morans run wild on the weekend. Yeah. I scarcely know where to start. We have so many damn Morans. But start, we certainly must.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You hear the music of the Calliope and you can't resist. You must come a-running to the Calliope music because that means we've opened the Moran Monday tent at the Horn. Yes, indeed. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you can hear for yourself, bear witness to the Moranity of the right wing in the United States of Merca. That's right, we've got birther Morans, deather Morans, ninther Morans, tenther Morans, booger-eating Morans, bircher Morans, bagger Morans, libertarian Morans, repiglican Morans, one and all. You can't tell the Morans without a program, but this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, friends and neighbors, you too can appreciate all that it is to be a Moran in America. Witness it, don't be it. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, and merciful sake, ain't it the truth? Now, why is there an ad run? That drives me batty. But, no, it's Moran Monday, and where do we begin? Well, since it is Moran Monday, why don't we take a little jog down to Alabama Stan? Remember Judge Roy Moore? Most recently, Judge Roy Moore has been infamous for his attempt to engage in a little bit of post-Civil War nullification and talking about how them federal unelected activist judges ain't got no business telling Alabama who can get married and who can't, when we all know that a traditional Bible-based Christian upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, gundamentalist, evangelical wedding is between a man and a woman and occasionally a coonhound. Or a possum. Yes. Well, okay, I added the possum part. Well, you know, before that, he got himself removed from the bench, Judge Roy Moore did, for flaunting his distaste for the law by putting a great big rock monument to at least one version, one translation of the Ten Commandments on the Alabama Supreme Court grounds. It was when he was told to take that the hell down and refused that he got himself in hot water and wound up getting unjudged. But, not to be deterred, if Roy Moore is removed as a judge, I think that's when you've been deterred. And when you put him back in office like the people of Alabama Stan did, that's when you've got a returred. Emphasis on the word turd. But anyway, Judge Roy Moore never takes the day off, and, well, one gets the idea that the goddess of irony is pretty much camped out on his lawn. Brand new story, Dateline today. Dateline Troy, Alabama. That's where Troy State University, or maybe it's just Troy University now, used to be Troy State. Used to play in the Gulf South Conference with the University of North Alabama, otherwise known as TUNA. I'll bet you didn't know that Alabama had a university named TUNA. It does. Naturally, their mascot is the Lions, when it should be, pretty obviously, the TUNA. But it's not a coastal town, and there's not a lot of... Best we could hope for is a, you know, big bass, you know, a big old bass. But never mind. So it was a routine night there in Troy, Alabama, until the call came in at about 2:30 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. That's why, it had been a routine night, and then it wasn't night, and it wasn't routine anymore. Morans. About 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, that would be yesterday, officers showed up at a report of an attempted breaking and entering, otherwise known as burglary. And you know, when you're talking about something going on in Alabama and the story starts, well, there was these four fellers in a pickup truck. There's a real possibility. That there's going to be some more entity involved. Yeah, it was five fellers in a pickup truck. I don't know if a couple of them was riding in the back or what, but an officer went to, after investigating the attempted B&E, and then the officer went to check out the automobile, the truck. Well, he looked around a little bit, and it turned out that when he approached the truck, he noticed what in cop speak is described as the strong odor of the smell of marijuana. Now, far be it from me to criticize anybody smoking marijuana. I won't do that. This is not about that. This is what you call being about the hypocrisy. Because one of the five fellers over to the pickup truck was young Caleb Elisha Moore. Mm-hmm. You know, Elisha, named for the Old Testament prophet. Caleb Elisha Moore is 24 years old. And just happens to be the son, the scion, if you will, of the Moore clan. He is the son of Judge Roy Moore and his noble lady wife. And they are, of course, involved and engaged in a traditional Bible-believing, upstanding, God-fearing, evangelical, fundamentalist family values marriage. Right. So they get a. So the officer detects the aroma of the smell of the vapors of some of the marijuanas, and asks all five of the fellers, who were reported for a possible B and E. Any of y'all smell? Any of y'all got any marijuana? Well, no. In the name of Jesus, no. I cast out that vile, foul demon of you thinking anybody's got any marijuana. No, it didn't happen, but it would have been fun if it had, wouldn't it? Well, that's when y'all got any weed in the car, boys? Uh-uh, not us. Never touch the stuff. Yeah, leads to homosexuality and such like. Yeah. At which point the officer begins to nose around a little bit. And that's when Officer Friendly found a clear plastic bag, and aren't they always, containing what he believed to be a vegetable substance likely to be marijuana. It was sitting on top of a And why the son of a federal judge or a state judge who hates the federal government would ever want one of these, I don't know. But it was a clear plastic bag of vegetative material that may very well test positive for being marijuana. It was sitting on top of Caleb Elisha Moore's passport. Right. And I don't think we're talking about a fifth of cheap scotch, neither. Also in the bag with the marijuana was four what appeared to be Xanax pills. Well, now, really, Xanax. Now, that is, last I checked, an anti-anxiety medication, isn't it? May I submit that injecting or scalp massaging the marijuanas and you still need the Xanax, you've got a bigger anxiety problem than maybe either one can handle, and I don't know, but what it may be, a demon. You better go home and talk to Daddy, Caleb. Or not. Because, see, that's when they arrested Caleb Elisha Moore, age 24, for possession of a controlled substance and possession of marijuana in the second degree, and they took him off to the Troy County Jail, or the Troy City Jail. That's where he posted $7,500 in bail money. That was on the controlled substance charge. That's the four Xanaxes. But he only had to post a $1,000 bond for the marijuana. This is not young Caleb Elisha Moore's first run-in with the law, however. Back around 2011, he went astray from the traditional upstanding God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christian, fundamentalist, evangelical family values of the Moores when he got popped for DUI and, no, really, drug possession. And as part of the disposition in 2012, he applied to be treated as a youthful offender and pleaded guilty to possession of a controlled substance in St. Clair County, Alabama stand. I'm sure he has already prayed for forgiveness. We will see if the state of Alabama is inclined to answer his prayers. Although it kind of reminds me of that scene from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, when, who is it, Delmer says, "Yeah, but I've been saved." Delmer, I think the state of Mississippi probably has a slightly stricter standard than the standard established by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You may be forgiven by him, but Mississippi still wants to talk to you. Right. Same with Alabama. And this is not in any way to make fun of drug problems or family troubles or young men who are still trying to find themselves and happen to occasionally find themselves possibly attempting a breaking and entering, otherwise known as burglary, when it's in the nighttime. No. This is about the hypocrisy. Now, nobody is a bigger follower of the Ten Commandments, and I would hazard to say that even the people whose book it belongs to in the first place don't have anybody who's a bigger follower of the Ten Commandments than Judge Roy Moore. The problem is, the Ten Commandments are kind of like a filing system for the rest of the legal structure there in the Old Testament. And what is it? Is number two, and I'm not making a joke, number two is that honor thy father and thy mother that thy days may be long upon the earth. Because, see, there's a law in there somewhere that says if you don't honor your father and your mother, it's okay if they take you to the city gates and the elders of the town throw rocks at you until you die. But apparently they did not take him to the city gates, for he was a youthful offender in 2011, and I see nothing here in the report from WAFF TV 48 Huntsville, Alabama, that says they're going to take him to the city gates over this one. Because I'm pretty sure that Judge Roy Moore is not a big fan of the marijuanas. No. Having reached out to them, WAFF TV 48 Huntsville, Alabama, a spokesman for the Alabama Administrative Office of Courts said that Chief Justice Moore had no comment on the arrest, and he said it was a personal matter. And it is. And it should be. And people should probably, in the second decade of the 21st century, not be getting popped for possession of pot. Neither should it be illegal. But in Alabama, Stan, it is. And in Alabama, Stan, just like in many states, the judges are supposed to avoid the appearance of impropriety. Well, I would say that this creates the appearance of impropriety for Judge Roy Moore because it makes it sound as though maybe he's just a big old stinking hypocrite who does not walk the walk and talk the talk and live the life, but instead allows his young son to run freely and licentiously about smoking of the marijuanas and for all I know, crushing up the Xanaxes and snorting them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. But then again, you know, morons, right? Right. So we've got that as a starting place. But it is by no means a stopping place. That was Alabama, Stan. Let's wander over, pursuant to something sent along to me by News Ninja Carol Baker, let us wander over to the Old Dominion. The story coming out of the Roanoke Times. And it's the story of a sixth grader, an 11-year-old, in point of fact. The story goes back to September. And the 11-year-old was a sixth grader at the time in the Gifted and Talented program at Bedford Middle School in, I guess, Bedford, Virginia. An 11-year-old kid got popped for possession of what school administrators and law enforcement personnel and court personnel were absolutely, positively, undeniably convinced was the marijuanas. Oops. The school system went absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach. The boy was suspended from school for a year. A sheriff's deputy filed marijuana possession charges in juvenile court. And all of this arises out of some tattling by the student's peers. This was last September. A few months went by, and guess what? It turns out the prosecuting attorney had actually had the demon leaf tested. It was not the marijuanas. They tested once. They tested twice. They tested three times, and no matter how hard they tried, the leaf could not come back as the marijuanas. Meanwhile, the case has been dismissed, but the young man remains out of school. He was supposed to go back to school today. Strict probation. Yeah. The young man is emotionally shattered by the process. Mama and daddy are both school teachers, and they have watched their son degenerate into fear and anxiety. His mother and father say that he is withdrawn socially. They have to take him now to a pediatric psychiatrist because of panic attacks and depression. There is no proof whatsoever that the young man ever used the demon marijuanas. And mama and daddy have filed suit, as they should have, against the school system and the sheriff's department. The juvenile criminal complaint was filed by the school's resource officer, which means a member of the sheriff's department who is tasked with keeping an eye on the school system. And he filed the marijuana charges, even though field tests showed that it wasn't. among other things, Melvin Williams, the lawyer for the mama and daddy, pointed out that the test didn't just come back inconclusive, like this could be, maybe it's not, who knows. It came back negative. This is not that. But here's the fun part. It may not matter. The school board has moved to dismiss the parents' lawsuit for the harm that the school board deliberately and intentionally caused to the young man on the grounds that it doesn't matter whether it was really the marijuana. Interestingly, the school system and the deputy and the sheriff's office are being represented by the same lawyer, a fellow named Jim Gwynn. He says, under the school board's anti-drug policies, it may not matter whether the leaf was marijuana or not. The parents still don't know why their 11-year-old son at the time was targeted. The school and the sheriff's office have told different stories at different times. Mercy. Not an 11-year-old pot smoke. Just an 11-year-old that something either real or unreal was said about. Anybody ever seen a Japanese lace leaf maple tree? You'd be surprised how much those leaves look like a leaf of the marijuana. I don't know that that's what it was, but it would certainly, if you tried to test a Japanese lace leaf maple leaf for, say, THC content, it would come back, say, no, this is really not marijuana, no matter how badly you want it to be, Deputy Friendly. Now, who's been punished more? The 11-year-old who didn't have weed? Or, say, Judge Roy Moore's son, who most assuredly, apparently, allegedly did, and will probably walk. Yeah, see, okay, yeah, News Ninja Carol Baker says, I have a Japanese maple in my yard. It looks a lot like the pots. It looks very much like the pots. In fact, I can remember way back in the dawning ages of time when I was riding my dinosaur to college, there was a brand of shirts out there. You know, everybody had one, you know, with the polo ponies or the little the alligators. Well, there was one that had a Japanese lace leaf maple leaf emblem that all the, you know, hip dudes were, because it wasn't a leaf of the marijuanas, but it sure looked like one, and it kind of quietly displayed to the world that you were, you know, cool.
Cool.
Right. Wouldn't it be nice if we could just get shed of some of this silliness? I'm sensitive to that story for obvious reasons. It is not easy to take a child into mental health care. You know, it's one thing I've noticed is that if somebody goes in for an appendectomy and comes out with a successful appendectomy, they don't feel shocked or traumatized by said appendectomy. And they don't tell horror stories about being in the lockdown unit of the appendectomy ward or the surgery ward. It seems like it's only in the mental health field that people come away from there harmed or at least somewhat shocked and traumatized, even if it's a positive outcome. My son, it turns out, was roommates. I'm not kidding. My son's roommate was an unrepentant child molester who would watch him when he slept. Yeah, really. So like I said, I'm sensitive to that. More on Monday, though. And, well, I guess you could say that we are in, I'm proud of myself, tall cotton tonight. Yeah. The United States' newest and youngest senator, who has embarked upon a career of treason, was invited on to face the nation this past Sunday to offer up his thoughts, if in fact we can really call them those, about why it was he led 46 other senators, including one of mine, Shelley Moore, Capito, into a declaration of treason and a pretty clear-cut violation of the Logan Act. You know, it wouldn't bust my chops at all if that one in our White House, you know, president not sure, was to pick up the phone and dial over to the AG's office and say, hey, listen, really, I mean, I know I have to put because the dollar that because I'm a racist or something, but really, can we not do a little investigating here and find out if they really did violate this here law? Yeah. Oh, let me back up for a minute because Steve caught something that sort of blew right past me. This is a thing. A good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christian fundamentalist, evangelical Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore said that the business about his boy and the Xanax and the marijuanas was a personal matter. Yeah, just a note from Steve in New York City. Personal matter? Like two men or women forming a marriage contract or having a sexual relationship together? That kind of personal matter? Yeah, just checking. Yeah, that kind of personal matter, and that is why the goddess of irony is camped out on Roy Moore's front lawn. Marty asking, how does the school board get to dismiss a lawsuit against them? Well, the lawsuit's filed in court, and they've hired a lawyer. Same lawyer the sheriff hired. I mean, you know, double your money, double your fun. And he goes into court and says, look, school board's got a policy that says it doesn't even have to be marijuana, so dismiss this here suit. My, what a lovely civics lesson we will be sending to the young man if he is successful. So, no, back to tall cotton. Well, let's just go to him over at Face the Nation, because this is too much fun. And Bob Schieffer was apparently at least a little bit disturbed by the fact that, you know, you got a senator who's been a senator for about 15 minutes, who's out there and decided... This little Gomer's got some ambition, doesn't he? How in the sweet name of God did he get into Harvard Law School or Harvard undergrad? Man, that whiteness will carry you a long way. You know, him and Ted Theodore, son of Rafael Cruz. More on him later. Moron, did it? Yeah, I knew you would. Here.
Deal falls, then what?
Well, got to get it all.
What do you want to happen here? What is your alternative here? Let's say that the deal falls through. Then what?
Well, as Prime Minister Netanyahu said, the alternative to a bad deal is a better deal. The Iranians frequently bluff to walk away. The Congress stands ready to impose much more severe sanctions. Moreover, we have to stand up to Iran's attempts to drive for dominance. They control Tehran. Increasingly, they control Damascus and Beirut and Baghdad and now Sana'a as well.
What, Edith, huh?
The Iranians already control Tehran. That's right. There are Iranians in Tehran, which just happens to be the capital of, you know, Iran. It would be a much bigger news story if it turned out there were no Iranians controlling Tehran. Apparently, he wants Bibi Netanyahu to control Tehran. Maybe Tom Cotton. It gets a little challenging. I'd like to kind of like to introduce him to this young woman. I think they'd get on rather famously.
Okay. Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future.
God bless America. For comparison and contrast purposes, the senator went behind the ears, Tom Cotton.
Bluff to walk away from the table. If they bluff this week, call their bluff. The Congress stands ready to impose much more severe sanctions. Moreover, we have to stand up to Iran's...
I guess we're just lucky he didn't call them severer sanctions.
Attempts to drive for regional dominance. They already control Tehran. Increasingly, they control Damascus and Beirut and that and now Sana'a as well.
And fluoride mandrake in little children's ice cream. We cannot let the vile communist Iranian Persian plot to sap away all of our precious bodily fluids.
They do all that without a nuclear weapon.
Now notice this goes, he says they already control Tehran. That was a good 10-15 seconds ago. Bob Schieffer's just sitting there like nothing happened. How, if you're Bob Schieffer, do you know, Tom, buddy, senator even, do you know where Tehran is? Are we really surprised the Iranians control Tehran? Huh? But no, not Bob Schieffer. Way too classy.
Imagine what they would do with a nuclear weapon.
I just want to make sure, do you feel that you have not weakened the president's hand here? And do you have...
No! ...to cross the table and look at him and go, are you out of your... Are you... What the... Oh my... Or something like that. Tehran? They're in charge of... The Iranians are in Tehran. The dominoes are falling! Stupid, it hurts us.
Any regrets about the way you went about this?
No regrets at all. And if the president and the secretary of state were intent on driving a hard bargain, they would be able to point to this letter and say, they're right, as Secretary Kerry said on Wednesday in a Senate testimony, any lasting deal needs to be approved by Congress.
Yeah, the only thing is, every time they point at the letter, they start giggling and can't stop. Because even the mullahs in Iran have a better grasp of American constitutional law than a guy that was given a goddamn degree by Harvard Law School. I mean, Jesus, is it 1L or 2 when you get your constitutional law class? I don't remember. I mean, they don't let you get far. And I'm just talking about a sorry little state law school. They don't let you get very far before they introduce you to the Constitution. I mean, we had people in my class who came from engineering backgrounds and English backgrounds and theater backgrounds and social work backgrounds. You can major in just about anything and still go to law school if your grades are good enough and you do well enough on the LSAT. And because people come from so many different backgrounds, well, you get to the constitutional stuff pretty quick. And you go into that whole Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, Article 4 kind of thing. You go into the separation of powers, the legislative branch, the executive branch, judicial branch. And it's all spelled out pretty clearly right there that the president is in charge of foreign policy. Nothing in there about Tom Tall Cotton being in charge of foreign policy or even any other of those 46 ignorami. That's okay because, well, Bob Schieffer's unflappable and Tom Cotton wants a hard bargain. I mean, we had all kinds of sayings and stuff there in law school all about how hard cases make bad law and stuff like that. What does it take to get into, I mean, can you get in there with something out of a Cracker Jack box now? Well, I guess if it's a, you know, if the prize in the Cracker Jack box is, you know, tuition. How do these clowns, these right-wing clowns, get into these vaunted flippin' institutions? I'm stumped. But it's not that. It's not just that. It's not that they get in. How do you get out of Harvard Law School without understanding who does what in the separation of powers? I mean, this isn't fine line stuff. This isn't hair splitting stuff. This is bright line. Nobody's really quibbling about it. Law, constitutional law. I mean, Jesus. Him too. Harvard used to be the home of the single most respected scholar on the Constitution in the United States at the time, a man named Lawrence Tribe. If you were in law school and you really wanted to understand the Constitution, you went and bought yourself a copy of Tribe on the Constitution. Has it been banned at Harvard or something? Is this some sort of weirdo Scalia-esque originalism? I'm an original jackass, and that means I can... What? Take it away, Bob Schieffer.
What they would do with a nuclear weapon.
I just want to make sure, do you feel that you have not wake up...
Yeah, how is it that we worry about what Iran would do with a nuclear weapon, and we're not particularly worried about what Israel would do with more than 200 of them? Because on the day, I mean, let's just remember, I know I've said it before, but it's worth saying again in the current context, on the day that Iran gets a nuclear weapon, Israel has them out-nuked at least 200-1. Now, what kind of a goofball, chucklehead, says, I got one nuclear weapon here, and I'm going to hold you hostage with it. And hey, you with the 200 nukes. If you don't do my bidding, I'm going to set off mine, unless you set yours off first. And yeah, I've heard all the fear-mongering. I've heard all of the brooga, racism against the Iranian people. But I have yet to hear a single cogent answer to that question. Iran, they don't have one. The intelligence services say they're not even trying to get one. I mean, that must make negotiating kind of a booger. Will you give up your nuclear program? But we don't have one. Yeah, but will you give it up, the one you don't have? I don't know. You know, that's not being offered. That's not being given an offer you can't refuse. That's being given an offer you can't understand. Yeah, but will you give up the program that you don't have? No answer. No answer. But it's pretty clear whose water Tom Cotton is carrying. Bibi Netanyahu came over here and tried to embarrass the president and wound up embarrassing himself and embarrassing a whole bunch of Republicans in the process, because he's in the election fight of his life. And lo and behold, if you check out the news out of Israel, you'll find out that there's a segment there that thinks Bibi Netanyahu is too much of a panty-waist liberal. So they're going to go and vote for Naftali Bennett or something, who is to the right of Bibi Netanyahu, and thinks that Bibi, for all the little Gazan children he has ordered slaughtered, is being too soft on the Palestinians. Consequently, Bibi just recently issued a statement saying, by God, if I'm reelected the Prime Minister of Israel, there won't be any two-state solution. There won't be any Palestinian statehood for them. Well, oh, hell no. Really? That's Israel now. A strident plurality of people who think Bibi is soft on the Palestinians. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's, understand, that's where this is coming from. He's apparently cashed the check and it cleared. Now he's toting the water.
Weakened the president's hand here. And do you have any regrets about the way you went about this?
No regrets at all. And if the president and the secretary of state were intent on driving a hard bargain, they would be able to point to this letter and say, they're right, as Secretary Kerry said on Wednesday in his Senate testimony, any lasting deal needs to be approved by Congress. When past senators like Joe Biden or Jesse Helms communicated directly with foreign leaders, past presidents like Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton did just that. The fact that President Obama doesn't see this letter as a way to get more leverage at the negotiating table just underscores that he is not negotiating for the hardest deal possible. He is negotiating a deal that is going to put Iran on the path to a bomb.
Oh. That's just a lie. And why do you want the hardest deal and not the best deal? What kind of a hard-on does Tom Cotton have for, you know, some dude who sells chewing gum out of a kiosk on Main Street in, you know, I don't know, maybe it's Ayatollah Khomeini Boulevard in Tehran? Why? What's his beef with that guy? Why is Tom Cotton so anxious to rain misery, anguish, and death on children running around the playground during recess. You know, they have that over there. Schools, children, recess. I don't understand warmongers. I've never, you know, most of us at some time or another have screwed up and bitten our tongues or bitten our lips and it hurts like hell, and you kind of go, and you get that ferrous sharp taste of blood in your mouth, and you go, pleh, that's kind of icky. Well, apparently Tom Cotton thinks it's an appetizer. Because he wants him some war. Of course, let's not forget that when Tom Cotton was just a little second Louis serving in George W. Bush's war against the innocent people of Iraq who never raised a finger against us, he wrote a letter back home to the New York Times calling for the New York Times employees to be, I forget if it was shot, beheaded, hanged, or just sent to prison and tortured for a while. Because the New York Times, which cheerled the run-up to the war, was not being, in his psychopathic eyes, sufficiently obsequious about our ongoing illegal, immoral, unjust war against the innocent people of Iraq who never raised a finger against us in the first place. Just say it. Wrap it up, Tom.
If not today or tomorrow, then 10 years from now.
We'll stop there, Senator. Thank you for coming by and explaining your point.
Thanks. And thank you for parking your clown hat and not wearing it onto the set. And we aren't even... I mean, this is not... This is not even the beginning. This is the end of the beginning. It's not the beginning of the end, but it's the end of the beginning. So we'll take a little break, and I want to extend thanks to News Ninja Carol Baker and to our dear friend in the Great Northwest for helping us reach our fundraising goal this evening. Thank you very, very much. It is much appreciated. And hopefully maybe we can get out in front a little bit for the week. That would be nice. Be very nice indeed. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Anybody wanting to jump in is welcome to do so at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. This is Conversation Radio, and the phone lines are open. Area code 304-574-8178 is one number. The other number is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676, and you are more than welcome to participate as the spirit moves you, even though it ain't Wednesday. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thanks, Ron.
Off the street, she wants to party, she wants to. weapons that it's grounds. And all she wants to do is dance. Now the guns don't keep the boys from making a buck or two. And all she wants to do is dance. They still can sell the army all the drugs that they can do. And all she wants to do is, all she wants to do is dance. And look grown up.
Yeah, that did work nicely. Thank you very kindly, Ron. Ron in Raleigh has the definitely has the soul of a DJ. Let's run over to the Skype line and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Yeah, hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi.
You're Rich from Watchung, New Jersey.
Yeah, what's happening, Rich?
I was wondering, did you have a program Friday night?
Yes, I did.
Because I guess it never got...
Actually, I didn't. We did. No, I alerted Ben Birch to that. And in fact, it was an epic six-hour Friday on the front porch. And,
right.
And so he'll be getting that into the archive pretty quickly.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to hearing that when I can get on tuning on the archive. I'm sorry. I'd love for something to happen again because I know you're having a lot of streaming problems the last week or so. So I'd love to get... That happened again last Friday. But I'm glad to hear that it didn't and that you have the programs of the archives. I look forward to listening to it. Thank you for another typical more on Monday start here. These people. I've always hoped that any Republican has an ounce of brains in their head after listening to this guy. And again, as you said, the way the media soft pedals these guys and is almost obsequious to them in responding to their inanity. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with Bob Schieffer. I think it's the same thing that's wrong with Bob Schieffer. That was wrong with that's wrong with Chuck Todd and that clown that does the Sunday morning programming there. I can't remember the name.
Well, I Chuck Todd said it probably best of all at one point when he said, look, you know, if I go too hard on these people, they'll never come back on the program. And then where will we be?
Yeah, well, I understand that, but you know what? Show a little moral courage and call them out when they do that. You know, so it just proves that our media has no moral courage at all anymore, which is, you know, pathetic.
Well, it's never been particularly known for it. I mean, even back in the days of Edward R. Murrow, he took hell for what he was doing and had to fight every step of the way for it.
But he did. See, that's the difference.
Yeah, but in the modern world, Rich, they'll just can your ass. I mean, look at how long NBC News tolerated David Disco Gregory. Remember MC Rove? Remember how he got up on stage and boogied with a man who should be wearing orange, an orange jumpsuit, and orange plastic shower shoes in a prison somewhere?
Are you talking about Karl Rove?
Yeah.
Oh, was that the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, I don't care if you are a White House correspondent or anything else. There are lines not to be crossed, and getting up and doing the boogie with Karl Rove is one of them, and it seems pretty obvious to me, Rich.
Or the way the media and the correspondents have laughed off Bush's stand-up routine about
no weapons of mass destruction under the couch here. Hey, Barney, have you seen him?
Can you imagine if Obama did a shtick like that? How they'd crucify him?
Oh God! There'd be $72 million worth of senatorial and House hearings into it. Well, right. Oh wait, we already did that. Benghazi. Ooh.
You know, it's kind of important. I was at a meeting today at lunchtime, and I happened to be there with a gentleman who was, I'm on very friendly terms with him, but he had served a tour in Iraq and a tour in Afghanistan in this currently illegal, never-ending war that we got going over there in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he had the nerve to tell me that Obama is being cowardly when it comes to dealing with Islamic terrorism.
Oh God! Well, that's just become one of the cheap parlor tricks the right wing does, because that serves as a dog whistle when they say that Obama's not being tough on the Muslims. Well, that's a way of telling Emery and Marveline out there and Cletus and whatnot. That's a way of reminding them that in fact, that Obama is a Muslim, even if he isn't.
But why are they so split-minded about the fact that, you know, Obama was not a man who could serve, say, in Vietnam? He wasn't old enough at the time. You know, George Bush was, and Cheney, for that matter, were actual draft dodgers. Why? Is it just because they're white?
Yes, that is the short answer. Yes, most every complaint with Barack Obama eventually works its way down to the simple, hateful, noxious, vile, filthy racism that inhabits the very core of the vitriolic, urine-colored, snake-flag-waving right wing in this country.
So you essentially certified my point that there are no Republicans at this point who have even an ounce of a brain in their head, because they're all reacting.
Oh no! They got brains. They got brains. They got brains. And they know who they're manipulating. They would be brainless if they persisted in doing this stuff, Rich, and nobody was listening.
Well, are we talking about a human brain or a reptile brain?
No. Okay, they got big lizard brains. We all know right-wingers have big amygdalas. But, no, listen, this is calculated. This is real. This isn't a boating accident. They really mean to keep the ignorant ginned up. I got an email here from our buddy Dennis in Kentucky. It goes back to something that Bro Fromix, Rick Santorum, said, and namely, to wit, and this goes back to 2012, but it's worth remembering, Rick Santorum said, "We will never have the elite smart people on our side." And that's true. That is the absolute truth. And so what they do is they know who their audience are, and they play to them, Rich. Oh, they play to them. I mean,
and they treat it as a badge of honor that they don't go in favor with the intelligentsia. That somehow
liability. Them pointy headed smart peoples they're what's wrong with America. America would be much better off if we was all just stupid.
So this tactic, they really believe that this is going to carry them to total control of the entire government in 2016.
Well, it remains to be seen.
I feel bad, country, that we end up having the Republicans in 2016 controlling all three branches of this government. I think we are doomed as a nation if that happens. Not that we're not already halfway doomed, but
it'll just hasten the anybody with an appreciation of the history of empires will understand that something like that, a vitriolic right wing with the bit in its teeth and all three branches of government in their control and most of the state governments, well, that'll just hasten the collapse of the empire.
And do you think they know that or they're not even aware that's what you're doing?
That part I'm not so sure they're aware of, because all they know is force. All they know is the expression of their paranoia and their fear via homicidal force. So, I mean, look, George Bush just about destroyed the American economy with his dirty little illegal wars.
Right.
We can't do that twice.
And I tried to point out to my brother, who is a financial person, he happens to be the manager of a credit union, that Robert Reich said, I remember Robert Reich saying a number of years ago during the Bush administration, that you look in history, nowhere in history of any culture anywhere on the planet will you find a culture that cut taxes as well as waging war. That is a prescription for financial disaster right there.
Sure it is.
And that's exactly what we did in 2001, 2002, 2003, and et cetera. And yet my brother poo-poos that. And he's supposed to be really smart, you know. But again, I know that, like you said before, he has a visceral hatred of Obama, ultimately based, as you said, on nothing more than the color of his skin. So all logic and reason apparently has gone out the window for my brother. And it's very sad, because I love him very much. But I don't think there's anything I would be able to do to have him see reason. Because he's so committed to the hatred, the visceral hatred you were talking about, that I just feel there's no turning, and then I'm giving up. I'm just going to give up, because whenever I say anything he finds not palatable, he jumps on me, he makes it very ad hominem. I'm very used to getting ad hominem attacks from visceral right-wing haters. And quite frankly, Bob, I'm pretty sensitive. I'm a sensitive guy. And it's really starting to eat into my soul, and I don't like it. Maybe I just should stop even talking to them. Communicate with them at all, because it goes nowhere.
You know, just don't no. It's family. You can't, in most instances, you don't and can't just walk away from family in most
No,
most
I'm not going to walk away. I'm just going to stop communicating with them about anything political.
Yeah, there's no point in it. Because, see, you might talk to them once in a while, but Fox News is on 24/7 in their homes. It's on in their doctor's offices. It's on at the car wash. It's on at the Jiffy Lube. You can't turn around. It's on in Walmart. You can't compete with that.
You're right. And I'm going to stop even trying to. And I got to tell you, Bob, I look forward to listening to your program, because it's probably the only 3 hours of sanity I get on any given day, because I'm literally in a sea of wiring morality where I live.
Oh, I believe you me, I understand. But like I've said before, Rich, it goes both ways because I've been up since like 5 and worked on the rig all day yesterday. Got up and drove down to Charleston, set up the rig, got the stream going, emceed the People's Foot Rally, tore down the rig, put the rig away, shut down the stream, got in the Rolls Royce crossover vehicle, and drove back up here. Absolutely, I mean, just worn down to a nub, and got in behind the microphone, and I perk right up because you guys do that for me. So I hope it is salutary on both ends of the transaction.
No, I definitely feel it. That the Head On Radio is the only real community that I feel really linked into at this point in my life. You know, I grew up in the 60s. I was a teenager in the late 60s, early 70s, when it seemed like America, with all its flaws, there was still a touch of sanity in the public discourse, where differences may have been conflict over differences of opinion or political leanings, but there was still a civility that no longer exists in the public discourse.
Well,
so I'm very wary about what I share with who I share.
Well, that is why the Horn exists as it does. This is a safe and welcoming space for us to talk about the issues, for us to even talk about potential solutions, to brainstorm, to process, because right-wing radio doesn't work that way. You know, you tune into the Beckerhead, or you tune into the Hannity job, or the oxymoron, and they will tell you what to think, and they will tell you what to do, and how to do it, and what, and if, and buy a Bose Wave radio, damn it, because, you know, flush isn't flush enough. But that doesn't work for our side. So, you know, I hope, and as far as I'm concerned, it will always remain that people have a safe space that is wingnut free. They're not welcome here. I don't want to hear from them. They have nothing to offer. They're not solutions to the problem. They are the problem.
And I really appreciate that, Bob, because I realize that in the propaganda-driven mainstream media today, the idea is that is fostered by the propagandists that there is a difference of opinion that's devoid of any acknowledgement of the facts on the ground as they are, and that everything is really a matter of opinion, and that there really is the only truth that is palatable is the one you happen to hold, and the fact that it matters that mainstream media in general caters to the lowest common denominator, which is devoid of any factual reference or ideation. It goes by on a purely visceral gut level, which is definitely driven by primarily the lizard brain, and not driven by any inkling of reason at all.
No.
And your program is totally devoted to reason. Yeah, you express it. I give you credit that your reason a lot of time is tinged with anger, as I think is only natural because you see the foolishness and you want to correct it. You want to infuse it with truth, and I admire you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Rich.
You're welcome. I'll let you go, Bob. I'll call you again real soon.
All right. Sounds good. Anytime. You are welcome all the time, and thanks for being part of the community, Rich. Have
thanks,
a good evening.
Bob. Have a good night. Bye.
You too. 20 minutes past the hour. Let's keep things rolling. Rich was on the Skype line. The Skype line is now open, 304-574-8178. I suspect we have Bill on the Gizmo line. Hey, Bill.
Good evening. I heard a little bit of you this morning.
Oh.
Early afternoon. I heard something. It sounds like you were down there in a large crowd of people.
We had about 150, 175 people.
There was some singing, and there was some guitar playing.
Yep.
In the back.
Yeah, the first time through, bless his heart, Paige Del Porto. We're calling him Overload Del Porto now because he blew my fuse.
Well, I'm talking about a couple of things. I turned in a Detroit talk show, which I do early in the morning at the sports station where I can hear the Red Wings, and of course that is my, you know, my the sport or however it's, no doubt about it, National Hockey League, or any kind of hockey. I saw so much of it live in my youth, and that's why I like it. I can when they tell you what's going on, I can see in my mind what's going on. I've seen enough of the game, you know. So it's, past this time. But they were talking today about the Reverend Dollar, you know? What's his name, Creflo?
Creflo, C-R-E-F-L-O.
Oh, Creflo. Yeah, he wants, and I don't know if you covered this enough.
Yeah, he wants $300 from all the congregation so he can buy a new $65 million 30-passenger Gulfstream jet.
How stupid are these people?
Well, but he controls the tickets into heaven and out of hell. If you're willing to believe in that, then you'll believe the people who tell you that they've got the way in and the way out. And if they tell you it's going to cost several thousand people $300 a piece so that they can continue to minister to the heathen, unchurched, unsaved, well, step right up.
But here's a couple of morning talk show guys, you know, who are associated with the sports station, and they were cutting him to ribbons. So maybe some good is coming somewhere in this society, you know. Maybe some people are catching on and say, hey, this is, these guys couldn't understand what the hell this had to do with Christianity or running a place for Christians or whatever, people to worship God. What the hell does he need this plane for, in other words? Because he wants it, that's why.
Yeah, what does God need with a starship? What's God need with a roller coaster or a water slide?
Oh, whatever they need. Well, like one guy has, doesn't have an amusement park that was connected with the guy in Virginia, the college in Virginia, the guy that died.
Oh, Falwell? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of the Browns' ex-football coaches was coaching for him at Liberty University.
Well, they did okay, I think, for their division for a while, didn't they? They had a little streak.
Yeah. Well, I won't even get into this basketball stuff because this is like a national lottery, you know, to these people. That's another thing all I've heard today in sports talk. Who's going to win what? Yeah. My feeling about betting on sports is the thing that I learned early is the, you bet to a bookie, the loser pays the winner, and the bookie gets his 20% cut. And on we go.
And the house never loses.
Yes. I had a health aide come in to work for me one time, and, first thing he does is show me a football pool sheet to bet on. But that's what I said you're here for, buddy. So you can hustle a buck, you know?
Right. I mean, I'm looking at the Midwest bracket, and my Mountaineers drew a number 5 seed, which is not terrible. And they start off against number 12 Buffalo. If they win there, they win. They play the winner of Maryland Valparaiso. And so that's let's see, 64-32. If they make it to the Sweet 16, they'll be playing Kentucky. Thanks, selection committee. Thanks a million.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know. I don't take getting out of the round of 64 for granted, and I sure don't take getting out of the round of 32 for granted.
Well, it's become another one of those big events. Somehow it's all kind of restaurants telling you about their big screen TVs. It's an economic thing.
Well, sure it is. And in this particular instance, especially the first couple of rounds, when there's so many games going on, that's when it's really fun. Because if you sit in a good bar with a whole bunch of TVs, you can watch 7 different games at once.
Yeah.
And if you like that kind of just complete hyperactive sports viewing, it's a blast.
Yeah, I guess so. But I was never a basketball player. I couldn't hit the broadside of my grandmother with a shot. My shooting was good, and when you're my height, what are you gonna do? One of my buddies still plays, and he's 72 years old, and he goes out and plays with some younger black men in the neighborhood. So go out and play with him. They call him Seth, because he's Seth shooter, you know? That's an old style. But he still loves the game, and he plays it. Me, my thing was, if baseball and knocking somebody down on a football field appealed to me, I had this unfettered violence in me. I like to knock somebody down. What the hell? I stopped doing that when I stopped growing, I stopped the whole game, you know? But anyway, getting on to the uranium situation. What is with these people? The Iranians are doing some of the fighting here against ISIS, you know that?
Yeah, yes. But see, according to the paranoids bill, that's only because they want to control Iraq, and if they actually beat ISIS back, well, then it'll be worse than if ISIS had won. I mean, there's no pleasing these people.
Yeah. And the Jordanians are flying against ISIS since the death of one of their people. And I don't know what they're flying. The Jordanians should probably used to fly English-made jets. Because the Arab Legion was a creation of the British. The Arab Legion, which was a ground force, you know?
Yeah.
But, hell, I'm very glad to see the Iranians fighting these guys. Because for every Iranian fighting there's one less American that, you know...
But the problem is you've got these bloodthirsty maniacs in America's right wing who want to send somebody's baby over there, somebody's 18-year-old, 19-year-old. I'm sorry. And on top of it all, what did I see? I saw a news story the other day over the weekend that some National Guard units have been sent to Estonia or somewhere like that. Estonia. And then I saw a news article in yesterday's New York Times talking about how the polls are getting a little bit itchy and antsy, and people are joining up with militias and self-defense brigades because the polls feel pretty sure that that Putin's going to send the tanks rolling over them pretty soon.
I don't think Putin's going to do that. I really don't.
Yeah, but we ain't there.
Yeah.
And he's got that entire neighborhood riled up.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah. There are a few historical instances, Bill, that getting Europe, any portion of Europe, riled up is not ever a good idea.
Well, you and I both know that. You know. We know enough about the opening stages of World War One and where it came from. How everybody was, you know, riled up. I mean, the Germans and the French hated each other. The Hungarians hated the Serbs because they were losing territory, which didn't belong to them anyhow. And everybody had a piece of Poland. Poland didn't exist. It was Russian.
Right, and hence the antsiness of the Poles now.
Yeah, they're in a bad spot. It's like I always said about Israel in biblical days. Everybody was conquering Israel. All the Greeks, the Persians, anybody, you know. Because I said, well, if you wanted to get from there to the Red Sea and North Africa, you had to go through Israel to get there. And they did. Let's pick the small guy and we'll go through him and get what we want. But I don't blame Putin because... He talked today about he finally made an appearance, you know.
Right.
I don't like the guy so much because his background is KGB. you know, his background is...
Yeah, he's a spook.
But I can understand why he doesn't want to lose, what the hell is the name of the place? The breadbasket of Russia.
Ukraine,
yeah. And they all want to get in there and they want to attack that ground, Bob. They can't wait to get wherever they can get and send the frackers in. They want to find out what's under there and what, how much more we can make. It just, I mean, I don't know how much, how if we'll ever get rid of the light and power companies, because I think they'll try to get control.
The business of America is business.
Business, yes. Been that way for a long time. But I'm not, but these people don't seem to understand that if we get pushy with Putin,
the Lindsey Grahams and the Tom Cottons of the world are more than happy for somebody to go and get shot at and maybe killed as long as it's not them. They're important now. They're in the Senate. They're much more important than some kid who answered the poverty draft on the south side of Chicago or South Central L.A. or some holler in Appalachia. Those are unimportant people. They can go and be part of the poverty draft military. Yeah, volunteer military, my ass.
Guys that were on the Philippines and were taken prisoner by the Japanese, a lot of those guys were in the Army because there was nothing else to do. They joined the Army because there was no work. And we had a so-called professional Army. And the only thing I had against getting rid of the draft was when they start drafting guys and they come home and they tell their folks and their families and anybody who will listen about what they did. That was how the opposition to the Vietnamese War really began to, like a snowball going downhill, you know?
Yes.
It gathers power as it's more and more people. I kept hearing the same story about some Vietnamese barber who was coming around and shaving the guys and cutting their hair, and of course they found them hanging on the wire. I mean, how many barbers they had that were out there with the Viet Cong, or whether the whole thing was one guy and everybody else retold the story, you know, it's like, that's the way things go. But anyway, I'll clear the line, but this is, I tell you, these people that talk about war with Russia, do they know what the hell they're talking about?
Yeah, somebody else.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that bright flash will make a believer out of all of us once. Anyhow, good luck with that one, Bill. Because me, I don't have my Asia. What a way to go, you know? Because that's one thing that I learned after the missiles, the October missile crisis, I learned that just as Kennedy and Khrushchev knew that, hey, we got to stop this crap. Because if those guys had marched out of Guantanamo to face what they thought was the Cuban army, they were going to be looking at some heavily armed Russians with tactical nukes. And you know what a tactical nuke is.
Absolutely.
Now, something you can use on the battlefield, theoretically. Oh, yeah, that's what we always wanted, you know? Anyhow, stay out of trouble.
Well, I am going to try, and you do the same, and we will talk soon.
Take care now.
All right, see you, Bill. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland about 25 minutes before the hour. We're about halfway through the program this evening. Hey, Carol Baker.
Well, hey, Bob Kincaid.
How in the world are you?
Oh, I'm fabulous.
Was it magnificent in Hooterville today?
It was a little warmish.
Do tell.
You know, I'm one of those Northeast Iowa, got plenty of layers of fat for the tundra type weather.
And it you can move right into almost uncomfortable pretty quick.
Yeah, I do. I just have this kind of anomaly where I can't sweat and cool my body off like normal people. So me and air conditioning are good friends, but I didn't turn mine on.
Well, I'm not proud of this, but it's fact. I got a sunburn today.
I can get a sunburn in the shade.
Well, I burn under the refrigerator bulb.
Oh, I come from a long line of redheads, and I just... a nurse friend of mine told me I was a freak of nature because I'm essentially a redhead. Of course, now I'm gray, but still.
Yeah, it's amazing how that happened. I was a strawberry blonde, and then one day a buddy of mine looked at me and said, "When did you see the burning tree?"
Exactly. Exactly. But listen, you were talking earlier, and I noticed that there was sort of a common theme between this poor sixth grade kid in Virginia, in Roanoke, and the Iranians. Aren't they both kind of being punished for something they don't have?
They haven't done that they didn't have that turned out not to be precisely.
I thought that was pretty fascinating. And then, Senator Cotton, let me explain something. This guy is not an anomaly. He didn't rise to the Senate because he's just so freaking charismatic. The Atlantic magazine did a great article on him. It was called The Making of a Conservative Superstar.
I saw that.
And he came from a little town in Arkansas, and he was one of those kind of focused, intense, serious kids with a lot of maturity. But he was groomed by conservative think tanks, and he got a lot of his funding to go to school and to go to the places that he's gotten to go. And he holds a lot of really disturbing ideas. In his Harvard senior thesis, he insisted that the founders were wise not to put too much faith in democracy because people are inherently selfish, narrow-minded, and impulsive. And really, only the, educated elite should run the country because...
Certainly the Hamiltonian vision.
No, listen to this. Ambition characterizes and distinguishes national office holders from other kinds of human beings, he wrote. Inflammatory passion and selfish interest characterizes most men, whereas ambition characterizes men who pursue and hold national office. Such men rise from the people through a process of self-selection, since politics is a dirty business that discourages all but the most ambitious. I wouldn't be proud of that comment.
Well, the thing is, but Carol, there may be elements of truth to it, but what we found out is that those ruthlessly ambitious people, at least in the modern era, turn out to be very, very damaged people.
Yes.
I mean, you wind up with Richard Nixon walking around with a belly full of Seconal talking to the pictures at night.
Boy, and I'll tell you, but I wanted to tell you, too, there are over, 300,000 signatures on that White House petition after a week.
Beautiful.
Yeah, which made me really happy. But I read this fascinating article today, and I didn't get all the way through it because I was, at work and wasn't supposed to be doing that.
Oops.
Fortunately, my employer does not listen to this program. And
we're not his cup of tea, are we?
Do I?
We're not his cup of tea.
Probably not. LBJ had an X-file on Nixon's treason. There was a letter that LBJ entrusted to one of his advisors that after he died, it was supposed to be given to the LBJ library, and it was not to be opened for 50 years after his death, and they opened it early. And some of it is national security advisors have gone over it, and some of it is still classified. But it talks about how Johnson was going to end the war. He was going to end the war. And if he had ended the war, Hubert Humphrey would have been the president. And Nixon sent his emissaries to Vietnam and waylaid the deal.
Yeah, torpedoed the process.
He did. The same way St. Ronnie of the Hills waylaid the release of the hostages from Iran when Carter was in office. But, I mean, there's a lot of really nasty stuff in there, but it's a long and it's a fascinating article. And it's on my Facebook page. It's called LBJ's X-File on Nixon's Treason. And for those of us who lived through it, it was fascinating. It's a really good article, and I can't wait to really dig into it. But you should read the Atlantic article and read that article that's on my Facebook page. Good history stuff.
I absolutely will.
Good history stuff. I know you like that stuff.
I do, and is there a takeaway for us there, Carol? Can we say that maybe treason is part of it's baked in to the Republican soul?
It is.
At least since 1968.
Winning at any cost. Winning at any cost. How many American kids died in Vietnam just because Nixon wanted to be president?
I have a secret plan. Yeah.
I find that horribly disturbing. And listening to your caller from New Jersey.
Oh, Rich.
Rich, I felt his pain while he was talking about having family members like that. I have a college-educated brother who should know better. And he used to align himself with the Tea Party until I kept referring to him as a teabagger and told him what that was. And then he came down from dinner he was leaving for work one day, and he announced to his wife, he said, I want you to know I'm no longer a member of the Tea Party. I'm a libertarian. So she calls me up on the phone and she says, I don't even know what that means. And I said, it means he's an embarrassed Republican, honey. And I talked to him just last week, and he was sitting there giving me this crap about Obama's a Muslim. And I said, John, he's not.
Oh,
he's
God. Not.
And I said, and you
then he's still a teabagger. I mean, no offense, but
he is. He believes all of this stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry if you think there was anything to Benghazi. If you think that the IRS was out to persecute poor little God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian right-wing teabagger organizations.
Mm-hmm.
If you think Michelle Obama's part of a vast international plot to take away our big gulps, yeah, anyone, you know, it's kind of like the DSM, you know, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's kind of like the DSM. You know how they'll have those axes, and all you got to do is qualify on 3 out of 12.
Yes.
Well, it's like that with the teabaggers.
Yes, and I love my brother dearly. I adore him.
We've all got family like that.
And he sits and goes, oh, I don't talk politics with you because, you know, I don't want to embarrass you in front of you.
You just don't. Yeah, right.
Because
you're a political naive.
Yeah. Well, he used to forward all of these Obama bashing emails to me that were forwarded to 20 of his friends. And I used to respond to them point for point about what bullshit they were. And then I'd hit reply all. And those stopped coming pretty quickly. Once he's...
Got disinvited from the list, did you?
I got disinvited from the email list of the Obama bashing, man-hating, wrong-colored club. But, you know, so don't tell me that the reason you don't debate politics with me is because you can whip my ass. It's because I can whip yours. So I dig in. So Rich from New Jersey, I know I'm tenderhearted too, but, you know, a lie is a lie is a lie. And I cannot let a lie stand. So I dig in. And I'm not afraid. And when all is said and done, I just laugh and act like it doesn't mean anything, but I get my licks in.
And in my case, what I do is I try to avoid it on the front end. And, you know, if it comes up, I go, no, no, because I'll straighten you up. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, his wife has banned all political discussions when we're in the same room. Because I think she doesn't want to see the blood on the floor.
Well, you know, you got to get out the Pepsi, and then there's the mopping, and right.
And she knows I'm not out of places to hide the bodies out here. So.
Are you kidding? You live on a lake in Hooterville.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, by the way, what you got to explain to me, what was that post on Facebook about Hooterville fire season?
Oh, holy hell. There's a huge burn ban for a big part of the state. It is so dry here right now. And they have announced that there are burn bans. God, probably 20 years ago.
But apparently it doesn't apply to Hootervillians.
Well, apparently not, because, you know, they're libertarians. Nobody's going to tell them they can't burn, by God. So I ran.
You can take my matches when you pry them from my cold, dead fingers.
Yeah, exactly. So I came home from the store yesterday only to step out of the car and could smell the most unbelievably nasty ache. It was tires burning.
You know, as a guy who has breathed raw coal smoke all effing winter, you win. That is just, no, that's awful. Oh,
so here it is, a beautiful day, and of course the wind is blowing from the south, and I live at the north end of the lake, so it's all pouring into my house. So I had to close the whole house up, and it kind of pissed me off. So this morning I put a picture on Facebook of the entire burn ban area. That, you know, it was 82 degrees, record temperatures. The humidity is like 25%, which is unheard of here. Because all summer long it's a steam bath. It'll be in the 80s and 90%. It is not a dry heat, let's put it that way. It is today.
It ain't supposed to be like Vegas, but oddly enough.
Oddly enough, it really is today. So, yeah, I put a post up there for Cletus and Marvelline if they could, you know, control. Because how 30-mile-an-hour wind gusts, it doesn't take long. They practically burned the whole town down about 20 years ago.
And you know, tires burn real good and real long.
Yeah. Don't I know it, because it was still smoldering this morning. I could still smell it.
Oh, my God. Well, I had something interesting. I noticed something interesting more coming back than when I was driving down to Charleston. But mm-hmm. You know how Friday evening we were talking about the potential blowout on Hughes Creek?
Yes, what happened?
Well, they decided it wasn't going to be one because it quit raining for a little bit. And they then let everybody go back to their homes. And then I noticed, because that whole mountain complex abuts U.S. 60. If you just look for Cedar Grove, West Virginia on Google Earth, and you'll see U.S. 60 running right there between the mountain and the Kanawha River. That whole mountain's getting ready to blow out.
Oh, man.
There's brand new construction where they built a big concrete retaining wall where the mountain came down into the road a couple of years ago. And it was almost, I don't know, Wile E. Coyote, Acme. It was like Acme Construction had done it, because everywhere they built that retaining wall, everything was still behind it. The mountain came down next to where they stopped building retaining wall. And I don't know if you've ever seen like a mud landslide in Appalachia, but it's like the mountain just kind of goes...
Well,
and
it was
slumps.
Like that one that was in the Northwest last year.
Yeah, kind of. And so I got a feeling with, you know, this is March, and this is 75-degree middle of March.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday was blustery and mostly sunny. Today was blustery and mostly sunny, and tomorrow the heavens reopen.
Yeah, it's supposed to rain here on Wednesday. The temps are going to drop about 25 degrees, meaning they'll still be above normal.
Yeah, but just because And the interesting thing was that all along Route 60 there was, it looked like there was a canal on the side of the road, and they had heavy equipment out there digging ditch for all they were worth.
I'll bet they did. Didn't Jesus just smite a church out by the airport?
Yes, he did.
I thought so.
Yeah, he did not miss. And the people evacuated. It's a little scary. Oh, hell no, it's a lot scary.
It is scary. I mean, we get tornadoes here, so it's not, I mean, there's something everywhere you live, but, you know, we flatlanders don't have to worry about mudslides and
no, you just,
mountains coming down on us.
Right, you just have to worry about Jesus blowing you off the map with a, you know, with a nice force five, force five tornado. Because God is love.
Yeah, because Vaughn and I spent a week in Joplin after that fiasco. We hauled two big tractors down there, and he moved heavy equipment while I passed out food and just watched people come through the line like the walking wounded.
Yeah. And this is, and it's going to get, it'll get interesting because this is now, you know, this is now tornado season in the Bible Belt.
It's coming. It's coming, and it's going to hit early this year, and it's going to be bad.
And everyone
now,
will
now
say.
Now, most of it's north of the river here.
Yeah. But, you know, there ain't no global warming.
No.
Ain't no climate change. It's
no.
It's cruel hoax. Did you hear what the cruel hoax did to Vanuatu?
I saw the pictures. They're talking total devastation. Like, it'll
like
never be
90,
the same.
In excess of 90% of the buildings in the capital don't exist anymore.
Exactly.
The president of Vanuatu said he doesn't know if his own family is still alive.
Yes. I mean, until you've seen total devastation, it was like going into Joplin, it just reminded you of the pictures that you saw of Hiroshima after the bomb, with just trees that were just, it just looked like scorched earth. And then it gets to the point to where, okay, you get all this equipment in. Where do you put 75% of a city that size? Where do you pile it?
Well, see, I went through Tuscaloosa every bit of a year, maybe two, after that string of tornadoes blew through there. And there was still stuff that was just leveled. And eventually, the mark of a civilization that's having a hard time keeping it together, Carol, is when you get to the point where the stuff just still just lays there.
Yes. Case in point, New Orleans.
There you go. I was in New Orleans, every bit of, you know, 5-6 years after Katrina, and they still had signs up for disaster tourism.
Bob, it was so impossible to get in to get at some of that those heavy buildings. They actually brought in circus elephants and hooked harnesses up to them to clear paths so that we could get the tractors in. I mean, it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And this is in Missouri, and it was not long after that Hurricane Irene hit the East Coast.
Yep.
And all of the... They decided... I remember... who was that asshole that got beat in Virginia? What was his name?
Oh, George Allen or... George...
The Jewish guy.
No. That was... how quickly we forget, mercifully. Cantor. Eric Cantor.
Yes, Eric Cantor decided...
See, that asshole in Virginia is too broad.
Sorry. Yeah, I realize that was kind of a broad statement. But he decided that they were not going to fund any more FEMA money. So they decided that in looking at the East Coast and in looking at Joplin, the East Coast was a lot more important to this country. And they pulled everything out of Joplin and just left those people to figure it out on their own. And the schools were gone. The schools were completely gone. But there was an old abandoned Walmart there. And they managed to get school opened on time in Joplin. And it was the United Arab Emirates donated a computer to every, a laptop computer to every school child in the city of Joplin, grades K through 12. Because the United States couldn't.
Because we can't.
We can't. We're too busy bombing the fuck out of the Middle East.
Well, we're just too busy being convinced we can't. Because it's not that the only thing we can do is bomb brown people. It's that no matter what it is we want to do, there's always a Republican there to say we can't. I don't know if you saw there was a story earlier today on the state of Talibandiana and how they have screwed their own turnpike.
I've been on the Indiana Turnpike many times.
And it's just pitiful. I mean, if there's any remote relationship between government and anything government is related to has got to go. Is that fair?
That's from a Republican point of view?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair. But I remember when Senator Snowball's state got pounded by the tornadoes and those kids were killed and the schools were wiped out. I remember he demanded all this federal money and they were like, wait a minute. You said no money for Joplin, no money for this, no money for that, but you get the money? And he goes, well, that's different. That's different how? It's just different. That was his explanation. But there's no such thing as global warming.
Yep.
The fact that F5 tornadoes are just an everyday thing out here on the Great Plains.
When they didn't use them.
It was a very rare thing to see something like that. Tornadoes are common here, don't get me wrong, but not to the total devastation that we've seen.
No, the kind that drives 2x4s through phone poles like toothpicks through cheese. Yeah.
Exactly.
But they've got their priorities the right wing do. Carol, I don't know if you realize this threat to this particular threat to our freedom. But did you know that Michelle Obama wished Persian people Happy New Year? The flag is falling.
Let me quote the woman on Ellen. I love Jesus, but I drink a little.
I love her.
That was hysterical.
First Lady Michelle Obama wished Persian people Happy Nowruz, which is the Persian New Year. I think it's probably associated with Zoroastrianism. I'm just kind of guessing here. And immediately there was one of those jackasses having a hissy from that website that rhymes with light and Obama has failed presidency by cutting whatever deal he can make with Iran. For that reason, we get to watch the First Lady pretend she cares about any of this. The Iranians most certainly know it was all for show, but that's what they appreciate, the fact that Obama is desperate enough to put on this show. Now, are they? But I got to have some help here, Carol. Are they? They got to be one, but they can't be both. They're either so stupid they would threaten a country that has 200 nuclear devices when they would only have one and actually have none. They're either stupid, or they are evil, crafty people who are taking advantage of our poor, mindless, brainless idiot of a president who I guess was some sort of legacy admission to Harvard Law. Oh, wait a minute. No, legacy admission, that was the last guy.
Token.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, right. So does that mean that Tom Cotton and Ted Cruz were just the token dickheads? Is there a dickhead quota at Harvard?
Clearly. Mitt went, didn't he? Didn't Mitt graduate from the Harvard School of
he got a more bigger asshole. Ted Theodore Cruz, anointed son of Raphael, and Tom Tall Cotton, they got out of that pile of bricks known as the Harvard Law School.
Oh, did you see what Ted Cruz did this weekend?
Oh my God! I wondered if we were ever. Oh Jesus!
Well, let's get to it. Your world is on fire, little
Your
girl.
World, yeah. Let's go to the audio so everybody can appreciate it. Ted Theodore Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Raphael. It takes a bit of work to remember all of that and get it right every time, Carol. I hope you know. So it's campaigning in New Hampshire time, and he went to inflame the easily inflamed, I suppose, Ted Theodore Cruz did.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we got. This is just a beautiful thing. Hang on. Oh, damn it. We muted again. Stand by. Hate it when that happens. All right. Now we're good.
And then I want to open it up to questions and have a conversation, because the whole point here is to talk about the issues that are weighing on your heart. But I want to just give you a word of encouragement first. Every one of us knows the threats facing this country are enormous. Look, I think there is an urgency to politics today that is unlike anything any of us have ever seen.
Hey, can we talk about that in a minute, Carol?
Oh, yeah.
The threats that America faces and the urgency in politics. I mean, I'll just snap the rubber band around my wrist or something in a minute.
It is now or never. I don't think we've reached the point of no return yet, but we're close.
But wait, semantically, Carol, if it's now or never, that means we have reached the point of no return, doesn't it?
Yeah, Captain Hyperbole kind of missed it on that one.
What a wit. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I know. He did a Cheney on that one.
Okay, so we roll along merrily.
We are close. And I believe if we go 4 or 8 more years on this same path, we risk losing the greatest country in the history of the world.
Clap, you idiots. You're supposed to clap there.
But the word of encouragement I want to give you is people are waking up. One of the great blessings of serving and representing the state of Texas in the Senate is I get to travel around the country. I get to see what's happening. What's happening here, I'm telling you, it is happening across the country. Millions of Americans are realizing this isn't working. The Obama economy is a disaster. Obamacare is a train wreck.
I guess we're going to have to come back to that too, aren't we, Carol?
Uh-huh.
Okay, just checking.
And the Obama-Clinton foreign policy of leading from behind. The whole world's on fire.
Okay, before we get to the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is video and we're only listening to audio, and that makes talking about it a little bit like dancing about architecture. Still, it is worth noting, and you can find this video, this original video, over at Raw Story. And it's worth the price of admission, so to speak, just to see the extremely concerned right-wing Republican sitting in the front row next to within reach and distance, if not spitting distance, of Ted Theodore Cruz, son of Raphael, anointed future king of America. The extremely concerned New Hampshire Republican who puts on his, and I'm not kidding, plastic souvenir green St. Patrick's Day drinking fedora. You know, the little green hats they give out in bars at St. Patty's Day?
Uh-huh.
Dude got his early. And he's just sitting in rapt attention. And I would prefer to think that there was a little bit of Irish whiskey involved somewhere, but he's probably just a teabagger. So let's back up. The world is on fire. Now, there's apparently, it just looks like there's a bunch of adults and you know, maybe staffer types leaning against the wall, and the rubes are all sitting in folding chairs there. But so that's, I've set the scene, and there's our context. Here we go, Ted Theodore.
See, of leading from behind.
Dude in the green hat, by the way, is shaking his head and putting his hands over his face like he can't believe the horrible truths he's being compelled to hear in his plastic green St. Paddy's Day drinking hat.
The whole world's on fire. The world is on fire. Yes! Your world is on fire.
That, and I guess we have to explain this, don't we?
Yes.
That's a 3-year-old little girl. The world is on fire? Yes! Your world is on fire! Who says that to a 3-year-old?
Whereupon, the 3-year-old begins to cry.
Now, they have since done damage control, and the mommy of the 3-year-old... Well, she didn't cry. She didn't cry at all. You know, she's a very serious, libertarian, conservative, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christian, Republican.
She cried. She cried.
Who does? I mean, what is it with these weirdo Republican right wingers and their children? I mean, you got Rick Santorum, who brings the corpse of a little half gestated baby home and passes it around the children, who are probably still having freaking nightmares. And this guy who gets it doesn't he just look a little bit like a guy that you would not trust in a dirty raincoat?
He looks exactly like that.
So let's get all of this. All right, going back.
Of leading from behind. The whole world's on fire. The world is on fire. Yes! Your world is on fire.
Water, Helen. It has a name.
And they're laughing.
Yeah.
But you know what? Your mommy's here, and everyone's here to make sure that the world you grow up in is even better.
Then what? Even better than the world that's on fire? Even better than a world that's on fire is a world that's only smoldering, right?
Just like the tires down the holler.
God bless it. You know, some political consultant's going, Ted Theodore, we've got a little clapping deficit. You want them clapping quickly. They weren't clapping nearly quickly enough for you.
Let me tell you, we know the path to turning this country around. It is getting back to the common sense values America was built on. It is getting back to free market principles, getting back to constitutional liberties.
I'm going to start screaming in a moment, Carol. You might have to take over.
Socialists and commies and liberals, oh my.
How are those free market values working out before Social Security when old people died in ignominious poverty? How were those free market principles working, Ms. Carroll?
Not so hot.
Yeah, I didn't think so. How are those free market principles working when... Or those principles of, what do you say, constitutional freedom? How are those working, let's say, in Little Rock, Arkansas, or Oxford, Mississippi, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama, before the troops had to actually make them let people of color into the schools? How are those constitutional values working when black folks were 3/5 of a human being?
Fabulous if you were white.
And I think we've got a point there, don't we?
Look, I think the path is real simple. Number one, we need to bring back jobs and growth and opportunity.
But wait a minute. Didn't that one in our White House just do that, Carol?
Oh, that's just a liberal lie.
I mean...
That whole bikini graph thing, that's just liberal propaganda. Because, you know, everybody knows that the real unemployment rate is 29%.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's something to be said for that. I mean, we know that the numbers are not, but
they're not what the White House says, but they're not even close to what those other rubes.
No, these guys, Ted Theodore Cruz anointed future king of America, son of Raphael. To hear him talk, you'd think that he was going to walk out the building and have a hard time getting through the soup line. I mean, we have problems in this country, Carol, but they're not problems that will be solved by people waving urine-colored snake flags.
And making little three-year-olds cry.
Or that. God. I would love it if that was just sort of his, at long last, sir, have you no shame moment.
Well, he is just... I've always called him the illegitimate child of Joe McCarthy. If you put their two pictures side by side, it'll freak you out.
Yeah, and he's got that shiny face like the Halloween burglar masks that used to sell for cheap in the dime store. You know the ones I'm talking about?
I call it greasy, but okay.
Okay, yes, precisely. Yeah. Who's listening to him?
But he talks so purty.
I wonder if he scares his own kids.
I'm sure they were toilet trained at gunpoint.
And what, in the future, it'll be a small miracle if this guy's kids, all they do is get caught in the front end of a B&E with a bag of Xanax and dope sitting on top of their passport. Is that the good? Is that the good future outcome? He's a scary one, Ted.
He is a very scary one.
And once again, we don't get to ask the entire state of Texas, at least the ones who voted for him, what were you thinking?
I don't know.
I mean, Kay Bailey Hutchison looks like a damn Solon compared to this goob. nice note coming in from Luda. You'll enjoy this. Luda says,
yeah.
And here I was thinking all Canadians were nice.
Well, they're not really Canadians either, and they're sure not Americans. His father's a Cuban.
That's true. But he did renounce his Canadian citizenship, didn't he?
Yeah, whatever. He renounced the wrong one.
And by the way, we have a communique from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan. Did you channel her again?
I was just thinking about her the other day, wishing she would call in.
Going back to and by the way, if you want to know how it's pronounced here in the hills, it's Tarfar.
Tarfar. I got it.
The Tarfar there in Hooterville.
Yes.
Subject line from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stand. Kansas is burning. Large amounts of acreage are allowed to be burned in Kansas. Although there are red alerts about dry and windy conditions, agricultural burning persists. It can't be good for asthmatics, to say the least. I can smell the smoke from afar. One night I drove to Manhattan from Kansas City, and around midnight I was going west on I-70 with the land burning to the left and right of me. Some fires reached the highway shoulders. I rolled up the windows, but that didn't keep me from inhaling thick smoke. I visited the EPA website for Region 7, the Flint Hills, just now, and the policy is for people to know when to burn and when not to. Self-regulation, says the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stand. Of course.
She's right. There's no legal ramification if you set a fire unless you burn down the whole city. I got stuck on the interstate the other day heading in towards Kansas City. I got as far as about that overpass where they hung the Obama dummy.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I was right there at Left Holtz Road, and the interstate was backed all the way up because they were putting out a brush fire.
And so, it just spontaneously started?
No, it was probably some goober throwing a cigarette out a window.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I mean, I smoke, but I'm smarter than that.
Right. What's the line from Animal House? And every spring, every fall, the trees are filled with toilet paper, and every spring the toilets explode.
Yes.
That's kind of what we're talking about in a way, isn't it?
That is kind of what we're talking about in a way. But one last little piece of news out of Missouri.
Oh, yes. Do tell.
A Missouri legislator has just introduced two bills aimed at restricting public restroom use by transgender and gender, quote, non-conforming individuals.
Oh, we're back to the potty, are we?
Yes. Jeff Pogue filed the legislation Thursday that opponents call harmful and demeaning and an instrument to create false fear of the transgender community. House Bill 1338 would require that all public restrooms other than single occupancy restrooms be gender divided. And if you taint one or the other...
You said taint.
On purpose.
Oh, okay.
Then you don't get to go to the bathroom.
Get a cork.
Get a cork.
I'm at a loss. And again, this is one of those things where nobody ever calls them on it because, you know, why are you fascinated with how people go potty?
I wasn't aware this was going on. I got the heads up from our friend Haley.
Of course it is, because we're all worried. I don't know. Maybe, you know what? Maybe they're ISIS transgendered and they're. And they'll come popping out of the stall and lop your head off.
You know what bothers me about transgender people?
Nothing.
They nothing other than the fact that they dress better than I do.
Yeah, well, they can sometimes. Well,
but I really don't have any issues with sharing a bathroom with them. None whatsoever. None.
Well, I mean, what do you do out in the woods? I mean, if you're a bear. Or something, no. But really, why does it matter? Oh God,
I don't know why it matters. Other than the singular mission is to shame these people, shame them, shame these good people, and they are good people. They don't cause any problems. They don't bother anybody. They got to go pee, Bob. They don't want to molest anybody in the bathroom.
We all do from time to time. Yes. And see, it's the people they... Do these asshats realize who they're lining up with? Because I know you said one last little bit of news. Well, him too.
Sorry.
8:18 p.m. for anybody who was in the pool. But do they not realize who they're lining up against? Or lining up with, I should say, because in Vladimir Putin's Russia, a man wearing a kilt was just arrested for cross-dressing in public.
He was wearing a kilt to the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Now, one, I had no idea they celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Russia, but...
I didn't either.
St. Patrick's Day, I guess, gets celebrated everywhere, doesn't it?
Yes.
But don't wear an effing kilt in Vladimir Putin's Russia. No word yet on whether he's going to start a war with Scotland or... no idea. Really?
I don't know.
But by the way, but see, so... This guy in Missouri is on the same side as Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm. Because he's a real leader. That's what real leaders
are. But it gets more complicated. Do you know who invented pants? I mean, since we're so worried about men in dresses, you know, it was good enough for Jesus. Moses wore a dress. Caesar wore a dress. Alexander wore a dress. You know who invented pants? Pants?
No. Women?
The Iranians.
No!
Mm-hmm.
First
mm-hmm.
It's pants, and then it's nukes.
And the next thing you know, your civilization. Well, the world is on fire.
Which, by the way, is so funny. I keep thinking the Iranians need to get into some sort of remedial program for building nukes because they suck at it.
Yeah, apparently not real good. Hey, there is some good news before we wrap up, though.
What is it?
Representing Justin Harris, who dumped his children like unwanted puppies.
Yes.
Has reached out to Arkansas House Speaker Jeremy Gillum and resigned as vice chair of the House Joint Performance Review Committee and the Committee on Aging, Children, and Youth, Legislative and Military Affairs Committees. Apparently, it's getting a little warm.
Now if he'll just resign his seat, I'll be a happy camper.
That's next.
He resigned from the human race already, so he might as well just.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever got. I don't know if he ever had the. I don't know if he ever had the membership card.
Oh, and crap load dollar. I thought that was precious.
Oh, your crap load dollar. Yeah.
Yeah. Craplow's pilot says that Craplow lied about the reason that he wants a new plane.
Oh, it didn't lose an engine and almost crash and, no?
Nope. All a lie. All a lie. So, donation page is still up, but they've taken the rest of the stuff down, and they're rewording why he needs a new plane.
I was wondering.
So they got to figure out another reason, so I just thought I'd toss that in there.
Oh, I feel a little bit better about the Rolls-Royce crossover vehicle now.
Well, you know, and the Gulfstream 5,
I would have taken the Range Rover, but we had it in the shop after the Paris to Dakar rally.
It is hard on the suspension, isn't it?
That sand gets everywhere.
Everywhere.
And
on that note, my friend,
I will wish you a good evening, and thank you very much.
I yield my time, Mr. Speaker.
You yield the remainder of your time, indeed.
And, I do.
And Molotov.
Yeah, Molotov to you, Fagoot.
Well, thank you, Fagoot. See you, Carol.
Bye, buddy.
Bye now. News Ninja Carol Baker with an update from Hooterville and parts elsewhere. Both lines are open if you want to jump into the conversation here as we wind down this Moran Monday edition of The Horn on the 16th day of March 2015. And I'll be pretty much out of gas by the time we're done, but it's been a heck of a day. And you know what? One thing worth mentioning, I learned a lot about taking the show on the road. And I feel pretty good about it. I mean, we had no hardwired internet connection down in Charleston. We had no hardwired electricity connection. But we had a portable inverter that we plugged into the accessory port of the Rolls-Royce crossover vehicle, and that provided wonderful, smooth, conditioned power to a laptop, a mix desk, a couple of microphones, and even a PA system. And the wireless internet was 10 up and 10 down. No telling where we could go with this, but it was really kind of cool to figure all of that out. And bless his heart, I didn't even have to torment John Fox over it. I was real proud. Let's go over to the gizmo line. Could it be? Could it be the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansasstan?
Bob.
Hey, Diane.
I had to call in after Carol talked about Missouri and conjured me. So here I am.
Yeah, burning Kansas.
Oh, my God. It doesn't bother me, but it has to bother some people. Yeah, well, I mean, it might bother me. How would we know? We breathe that air, and then someday we're sick.
Right.
But, yeah, quite a sight. It's quite a sight to be there at midnight on the road on I-70.
Oh, no, that's got to be like something out of Mad Max.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's actually pretty cool because this land around me is not flat. It's the Flint Hills. And so it's, you know, the fire was on the mounts and on the high points of the hills and then down below and on both sides of the highway. And I guess it's managed, although the fire reached the shoulder on both sides of the highway. So
does it ever get hot enough to melt the asphalt, or is that just summer in Kansas?
I don't know how that works. I mean, there wasn't a lot of fire on the highway shoulders, but it was enough to make me wonder, you know. Anyway, there was probably nothing to burn, you know, on the shoulders, so it didn't go like a natural fire break. But Bob, I was wondering, I'd like to tell my transgendered, my one transgender story.
Oh, please do.
Following what you and Carol were talking about. Well, I was teaching at the time and at a university in Pittsburgh, and I taught mostly at night because I was working on my PhD in the day, and that part about the night is going to be relevant. So I was friends with this management information system professor who had moved to Pittsburgh from Arizona to take over a program at the university, and he ended up being our president's go-to guy, and he lived in the suburbs, and they played golf together. So he was like wasn't a large university. He was like a favorite son. That's also going to be kind of important in this story. Okay, so this guy's name, I won't give last names, but the guy's name is Bill, and he used to come in my office, and we'd go over stuff together, and, you know, and I'd see him a lot at night because we both taught at night. Okay, so one night I got to campus and I went to the 8th floor, which is also part of the scenario, and I passed by Bill's office. I was going to say hello. And standing in front of Bill's office was this person who was the height of Bill, but with hose on, heels, a wig, a dress, makeup. And out of the blue, Bill says to me, "Hi, my name is now Valerie." And I'm like, "Okay, your name is now Valerie." I didn't miss a beat because I'm one of those heterosexuals who like to live. I lived in Shadyside where the gays lived, and because I have the idea that it's more fun, more aesthetic, more exciting. So I've just been kind of conditioned to, you know, whatever. You know, whatever. But the man on that floor, well, no, it didn't go over well. And, of course, our president was stunned. And so what happened was whenever Valerie, alias Bill, we shared offices at that particular university. Whenever she would go into her office, her male roommate, they had always gotten along, would just go out in the hall and stand there. You know, that was the dynamic. And so the rest of the story is that it became a big deal about the bathroom, and that's what caused me to call, because Carol was talking about some ridiculous bill in Missouri about, I don't know, bathrooms, I think. So it became...
Sadly, yes.
These bills that are coming out of Kansas and Missouri, I mean, and the rest of the country, too, but it's just every day I look at the news and there's something horrifying. Okay, so it became a big deal. I was at the downtown campus. The suburban campus was in the suburbs. And so between the two campuses, there was this policy discussion that came up, like what bathroom could be used. I mean, my God, you know.
You know, it just flummoxes. It flummoxes me that that's a thing.
Yeah, well, it was a thing. And so I just, you know, I got along with the president. The issue came up, and before it went any further, I sent a email message out to everyone saying, you know, I am the only female professor who teaches at night, and the female restroom is across from my office. So Valerie goes there. That's a solution, and that was the solution. And so we got that done. But no, it was a problem. And then I found out that I didn't really know stuff that I thought I knew. I mean, just because I ran around with Carnegie Mellon, university theater type, somebody in shady side, you know, which, and I mean, I'm saying that because that was just the place where people got together and, you know, being gay was not a problem, and theater types came and went. You remember Pittsburgh, so.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I knew more about life than I really did, because one night, a mutual friend of mine and of Valerie joined us for dinner. She happens to be lesbian. I happen to be heterosexual, who thinks I know what's going on, but apparently I don't. And there's Bill, I know Valerie, who's not yet had the operation, but, you know, she's on her way. And halfway through dinner in Shadyside, I see that my friend is getting very, very nervous. And then I realize that Valerie's hitting on her.
Oh, my.
And then I was, I admit it, I was confused. So that's my, That's my story. But there was no problem. I just thought, oh, I really, you know, don't know what's going on here. And the only two who do are sitting across from me. And even they might be confused or not. But the only other thing about that dinner is Valerie was so happy about what was going on. She said, I just want everyone to know, you know, what I am, and put it in their face. She said, so I stopped traffic on the freeway, or slowed down traffic on the freeway because I'm putting on my mascara and lipstick before work. And I said, Valerie, I don't want to rain on your parade, but you best stop doing that, because that's not going to be helpful. And I mean, it was just kind of, I mean, can you imagine knowing someone for 3 years? Not well, but he's in your office, and the president is touting him as the favorite son of the university for administrative stuff. And then you walk by his office, but apparently, and you know, that story I just told you is what happened, but apparently legally, I think it has to be handled something like that. But my point is we got the bathroom situation figured out because I didn't care. So, but people do. People care.
But you remain as flummoxed as I am, right?
About why they care? Well, I think it's too bad it's an issue. I really do. But I'm not sure I can put myself in the place of these people who care. I can't put myself in their place. I don't know what.
Right. No. That sounds like where I am, Diane, because
yeah.
For the life of me, there's so much about the life of a right winger that I just can't touch, because I can't establish. You know, I can try to be empathetic, I can try to be sympathetic, if I'm so inclined to be sympathetic to bigots, but I mean, for the life of me, I can't understand what it is. I can't understand how life is so tiny.
Yeah, they should.
That you actually give a damn where somebody goes potty.
Yeah, but it's in there with them. It's like that. The other professor, as soon as his roommate came in to his office that they had shared for what 3 or 4 years in a dress and high heels, he went out in the hall. He wouldn't go back in while Valerie was in his office. This may sound confusing, and the rest of the men commiserated with him. So it's in their space. I think that's a problem when it's in their space. Although I could be wrong, because they seem to revel in thinking about it in the abstract when it's not even probably.
Oh, see, I think you're getting there now.
Yeah.
I think maybe you're being and I don't want to say too academic.
No, I couldn't but, be too
but
academic.
No. You said they revel in it. I would be, I suppose, a little bit more coarse, Diane.
They're concerned
about this stuff because it turns them on to think about it.
Gosh, well, that I don't get.
Of course not, because you don't live your life by the metric of whose world you can busybody yourself into.
And I wonder if they've ever traveled in Europe, because I have many, many times, and so have you and others.
And the bathroom attendant, you tip them and everything, and...
And unisex bathrooms, and I saw men using the tree in South Paris at a cafe. You know, I'm like, well, you know, this is not my culture, and no one seems to be upset about it, so I'm not. And whatever. I mean, put them on nude beaches, really. You know, I mean, have they been anywhere? I just wonder if they've been anywhere in terms of reading books or just... Not everyone can travel, but their world becomes very small, doesn't it? It becomes a toilet. That's small. You know? Their world becomes a toilet. That's not only a metaphor. I mean, that's it.
Stand by. I had to.
Well, if we can get to it, I mean, if it's that simple, I guess there is a bell ringing occasion. But I was also thinking, you know, this world is very, very complex. Not telling anyone anything they don't know, but I mean, just for people to get over the digital divide, you know, is a big thing. I don't know how many have, but you know, most of us have had to. And I think maybe people grab onto just what's knowable in their personal experience, and you know why it has to be a toilet. I don't know. I really don't.
Well, but if it wasn't a toilet, it would be locker rooms, and if it wasn't a locker room, it would be whether or not we were sharing closet space. I mean, if a transgendered person wanted to hang his or her overcoat next to a hetero person's overcoat. There would be some right-winger somewhere who would be willing to declare that Jesus would withdraw his veil of protection from America. Fire, brimstone, frogs, locusts, whatever. Because they live to search for that stuff, Diane.
Well, I think, I really don't understand it, but I think part of it might be, and this sounds academic, I know, but it might be a flight from complexity. Because when you cannot control complex geopolitical maneuvering or understand them, or the world just looks, you know, with iPhones and iPads and digital this, digital that.
Yeah, but they've got all that, but the right-wingers have all that. They're plugged right in. I think you're really right on top of it, though. It is an inability to deal with complexity, but it's not some sort of geopolitical complexity. It is the complexity of a world that does not conform to their prejudices and their bigotries. Because this used to be a world that did. Okay?
There's always
someone new to hate around the corner.
Yeah, but I mean that bigotry of anything, I mean whatever it is, I think what we're both coming to is that might be all they have left. Not the people in charge of the machinations like on Fox or this Arkansas guy and his backers, but the people they manipulate. It might work because they know those people, whether they know it or not. That hatred and bigotry, however it manifests for whomever, is all they have left in easy grasp. Don't you think?
I think you're right. Yes.
I don't know if I'm right. I really don't, because I don't know.
But because of the nature, you know, there are some things that it's our friend Jim who has said this. There are some things that only the grave can solve. But as we have seen with racism, the grave didn't. I mean, it's we're a long way from George Wallace in the schoolhouse door, and yet they seem to keep replicating. And while it's no longer institutional, it's personal, and the personal doesn't seem to be going away.
Yeah.
So I don't. It almost takes on a kind of a biblical connotation for me. Yeshua is alleged to have said, "The poor ye have always with ye," but he didn't say the poor what? Because, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, he talks about blessed are the poor in spirit, yada, yada, yada. Well, that's not the same poor he's talking about.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the poor ye have always with ye, you know, the poor, the people who think poorly, the people who live poorly, the people who interact with culture poorly. You know, and you know, somebody who's worried about where somebody else goes to the potty is certainly within that general rubric, are they not?
Yeah, and it crowds out. It just sucks up so much space from the public discourse that should be going on, and I don't listen to it after a point, of course, but it's hard to miss when the legislative body in Missouri takes it up and elsewhere. Then it's on a level where it's difficult to miss. And I think, I believe in laws and public policy, but to me this is almost like our country came to the point of, you know, some intelligent thought before a lot of the country was ready or willing. And now, you know, it's just like a pressure cooker. The lids come off.
But by the same token, Diane, this is what they actually mean when they say, we're going to take our country back.
Yes.
They want to go back to a black and white world of Ozzie and Harriet and Ward and June and the Beeve. And oddly enough, there were never any black people. There were never any Asian people. There were never any people from the Indian subcontinent. No, it was just a white little world. And they want that back.
Yeah, you know, the problem is there are spaces where we can't go back. And maybe it's not in their space, or maybe they don't know about it. And then I know in a way I'm in, well, to say the least, a protected space, because 2 years ago, 40% of my undergraduate class were from China. 40%. And so how is it, and that's not unusual at a lot of universities. It was unusual for that one class. You know, I know how that happened because I helped them. And so their network sends people to my class. But at any rate, how is it gets turned back when we have what we actually have in universities and in other spaces and trade? I mean, whose goods are they buying in the store? I guess that doesn't occur to them.
Well, and it doesn't. I think it does occur to them, Diane. Look, everybody interacts with gay people every day.
Sure.
And they love it, because you know the person will walk away from them in the store and they'll say, and you know, she will look at he or he will look at she and say, I think he's G-A-Y. Now, the rest of us, we don't.
No.
I know. I think you're right. Because then they move on to that next phase of their bigotry, in which they both start thinking a little disturbingly about sex. Can you imagine what it must be like when they have sex? No, talk dirty to me, baby. Yeah, right? I mean, you get what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, their mind goes from a straight line from, I was going to say X to Y, but why confound the metaphor? I mean, the thing is, I think whenever possible, you know, some of my friends in Pittsburgh would want me to go clubbing with them, and I'm like, you know, that's not really my scene. What would I do in a gay club? I'm unclear on that. You know, maybe for an hour because, you know, we have a lot of fun together, but after a point, you know, I think these things, you know, I'm in a world where I'm with people, we talk about it. We talk like, oh, well, you'll do this, but no, that's not my thing. So, you know, we talk about it without fixating on it.
Yeah, they fixate.
Well, apparently. So that's one reason I cannot understand them, because it's, I mean, and even my mother, like, I took her to Paris one year because I was giving a paper at a university there at a conference with a lot of my friends who were doing the same. And
culture dropper.
I don't know if you know this, huh?
You culture dropper, you.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the life. You know, you get funded to go to Paris to give a paper, and then you see Paris. I mean, that's, no, I have a friend. I have an aunt by marriage from Paris, and my cousins are half French, so I'm kind of grew up with some influence from, you know, some talk about Paris. But at any rate, I don't know if you know what, but Paris shuts down when they have a gay pride, when they have their gay pride parade, like big time. It's a big deal. And so the people who were running this conference didn't realize it, and we had to get from the university to, I think it was called San Samaritan, a place for dinner. Then we were going to go view the Eiffel Tower. I mean, it was all arranged, but we couldn't, we couldn't get around in the streets. We had to figure out a way to go to the subway and avert the crowds. No big deal. Everyone figured it out. It was kind of a trip. But at one point in the day, my mom and I needed to get across a boulevard. And it was all the gay pride parade. And I'm like, Mom, to get across this boulevard, which we really need to do to get to our hotel, we're going to have to become part of this parade for a short amount of time. And my mother, I have to give it to her, conservative. She'd never seen Europe till I started to take her to these conferences. And some other friends, academics, they also started taking their mothers and fathers, so they actually had, as part of the academic conference, they had a little arm called the Parents Club, so it was really kind of cool. But anyway, my mother was kind of conservative and hadn't seen, you know, hadn't been out of the United States, out of the middle of the country practically until I took her, just blended right in, just stepped into the street, and I'd rather my mother had
not. Oh, bless her heart.
No, she was just like, this is what we do in Paris. I personally was a little upset because I would have preferred not to expose my elderly mother to what she saw.
Your elderly mother was...
didn't care. I mean, she didn't say anything, and... You know, so...
Well, what's that poem that goes around, you know, why, when I am old, I shall wear a red hat or something like that? Or
I think she was just being very adaptive and non-judgmental, and that's probably who she really is. But if you engaged her in any conversation about who uses the bathroom, like we were just talking about, you might hear something different.
Well, but I think to be fair, that's probably because, and I don't care what religious tradition one is raised in the United States, sooner or later, our puritanical Calvinist past is going to catch up with you.
Well,
I just hold fast to that, because this whole country is hung up, and we're hung up about that.
We should just take them all and put them in the middle of a gay pride parade in Paris.
And there, well, and well, isn't that the closing scene from the Birdcage? With the right wing senator having to get in drag and dance his way out.
I love that. They made that Le Cajun Falls into a movie. I love that.
Well, Gene Hackman was the right-wing senator.
And Christine Baranski, I think that's how you... Yeah, that was a good cast, and that was... Yeah, that was really cool. Well, you know, when you think about it in terms of my mother, we had been to the Louvre. I had taken her to Musée d'Orsay because I like the Impressionism and all that. And we had eaten, we had really good food. You know, I don't have to tell you the Rodin Park. Oh. And so I think within that context of seeing the brilliance culture that has come from the Gallic temperament, the French, I think then that was just kind of put in its, you know, in that wider perspective.
Sure.
And really, that Paris is, I mean, what's not to like? And, but it was raunchy, and I wouldn't have exposed my mother to that, you know, on purpose, just because I'm a little protective of her, but she didn't need it, so.
No, and everything reminds me of something else, Diane. There's the, who is it now? Audi, maybe? I'm not sure. But somebody's
car
got...
company?
Yeah, there's a car ad now where there's this little old lady in the back of the car riding with her son and their daughter-in-law and the three children, and she's in the third row back seat, and she said, and the commercial depicts her saying, "These are very, very nice leather seats. You know, your grandfather, your father really liked it when I wore leather. He was a very dominant man." And the horrified mother and father, her grown children in the front, "Mother, that's enough. That's inappropriate, mother."
Yeah, that's right. But tell us what they have in their, you know, repertoire.
And, you know, it's not just "when in Rome, do what the Romans do. When in Paris, do what the Parisians do." It's a rule of thumb.
And I think.
You know, I didn't have to be offered a German beer twice.
Yeah. Well.
No, bring me a Budweiser, damn it. Please.
Well, I know this sounds like a cliche, but I think the other thing is, the guy I ran around with in Paris at the conference that is a professor from the West Coast, he brought his mother, and he's openly gay. So we all four ran around together. And so, my mom adores his mother, and she had a friend at this conference in Paris through his mother. And you know, I mean, all this, it makes it sound like something unusual was happening. Nothing unusual was happening. We were a foursome that was seeing Paris, but I'm just saying within that context, my mother was just, you know, totally.
You have painted a picture, Diane. And I am enjoying it. It's a wonderful little portrait. But I don't know. There are other stories out there. Wasn't it Rand Paul and that thing on his head at one point who took some sort of fundamentalist junket to the so-called Holy Land, and then he and they, or a bunch of them, proceeded to behave like complete heathens and, you know, get liquored up and, you know, "Hey, look at me, I'm going to walk on the water," you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's another kind of story, isn't it? Like, I mean, they really believed what they believe in. You'd almost think that's desecration to act so, you know, stupid about the water and, you know, act like it's a frat party instead of a holy site. My God.
Right.
So another thing, Bob, is when I found my mother's medal, she was a real strict woman. She raised me very strictly. I won't go into it, but I mean, my TV was censored. My music was censored. I had to listen only to classical music, read classical books. I thank her now. But for a while, she was very, very strict on my upbringing. So within that context, I will tell you that my friend, his mother, and I and my mother were walking through Pigalle, you know, in the day. That's the red light district.
Yeah, sure.
Because we came down from Sacré-Cœur or whatever, that beautiful white church on the hill. But anyway, in the daytime, it's just like cafes and stuff. But there are these porn shops everywhere. So, well, not everywhere, but there's
enough to notice.
So I said to my friend, Craig, I said, Craig, let's tell the mothers we're slipping in here to this porn shop and really get their goat, and so they'll be all upset on the street. This is what academics do in their spare time. And so I said, so the mothers are walking in front of us. I said, hey, Mom, Craig and I are going to this into this porn shop. And then we just slipped in. But in the back of my eye, I saw my mother stamp her foot and go, Diane, you get out of there. And so Craig and I, we stayed in the shop, and we thought, oh, this is going to be so much fun when we walk out. And we're grown adults, you know, and we walk out, and the mothers are standing there fuming, and what will they have to say? And, okay, so we give it 10 minutes, and then we walk out. Oh, they're strolling down the boulevard, you know, looking in the windows and talking, and they don't even know where, you know, if we're in there or if we're not in there. They've forgotten all about us.
Yeah, Diane, that was an obligatory you get out of there. Okay,
it was just a reaction, and then they were off.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the rest of the site. So, I don't know. I don't know if those personal anecdotes make a lot of sense.
Well, they do insofar as they describe what it is when open-minded Americans travel abroad. Then there's what happens when right-wingers travel abroad and, for instance, assume that the cabbie must surely speak English, and when he doesn't respond to English, you yell the English louder.
Oh, God. You know, I was once...
Ugly American is a phrase for a reason, Diane.
Oh, yeah. And I was once giving a paper. I know this sounds real academic and all, but I gave a paper once at the Stockholm School of Economics, and I was real excited about that because my grandparents came from Stockholm, and I was going to meet John Kenneth Galbraith because my mentor had written him a letter in advance of introduction, and so the meeting was planned, and I was thrilled, as you can imagine. And the meeting did happen, and it was so cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so cool. This guy is 6'7", and he's just generous soul. And anyway, but I gave my paper, and then afterwards, you know, in this session, academics gather around, and you exchange thoughts, you know, after the session is over. And a lot of times I blend in Europe until I open my mouth and cannot speak the language. And, of course, my grandparents came from Stockholm, so I probably look kind of like a Swede. I think I do. But anyway, so the Swedes were talking in front of me like I was one of them. And one of them said, well, that American who criticized someone's paper, he really did that badly. And someone said, well, you know how the Americans are.
Yep. Score.
And then
hey, Diana,
I hate
to say it, but we got to get out of here, dear.
I know. Well, good wishes to you and yours, Bob, and we'll talk another time.
All right. Thank you, Diane. Have a lovely evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. The marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan. And it is, like, you know, seriously time to get out of here. Thanks, one and all, for your participation. Thank you for helping us meet our fundraising goal this evening. Thank you to Carol. Thank you to Thomas, it was wonderful meeting you and Mo, Thomas, meeting you today. And thank you to our dear friend in the great Northwest. Thank you, one and all. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. It is time to get out of here. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.